And does everybody remember you're supposed to say I have no...
Karen O'Rourke.
Hi, Karen.
Hi, Karen. How are you? So do you want to sit in up here?
You have your option if you want to sit here or if you want to sit in the audience and then come up.
I'm thinking to sit here and then I can see what's going on.
That's a good idea.
And the other thing that Rob and I talked about is in this room, a lot of people had trouble hearing when the speaker was standing up because the mic is so low. So if I'm going to announce that...
Can you put it on the little finger?
It didn't seem like it helped a whole lot. I mean, we can do that.
Well, I'm going to be...
Because look,
it's going to be, you know, 2 or 3 feet away.
I won't be able to see anybody.
But I think it's kind of in the way a little bit, huh?
Can you pick it up, the microphone?
You can pick it up and hold it, yeah.
Okay.
We had some folks, really tall folks like you doing that.
But we'll expect a song after.
Hi, I'm Patrice Chamberlain.
But then
also, there are principles in drafting laws that make them more likely to be enforced. And then there's also a political component to it. Making enforcement a political priority. So, you know, you empower the bodies that have to enforce are heavily funded. Presentation today, but you know, they referred to our paper that we did for NPLAN.
Have you gotten to the whole conference?
And that's probably going to get more direct. Skipped out this time, I'm sure. I mean, this is good.
Had a few of your folks come to Maine to talk to us about the NPLAN.
Let's see if we can pull up one more chair so we don't have to do.
Well,
or take this one out of the way if we're going to stand up?
I don't think so, because I'm going to need to lean down for the mic, for the mouse. I think I probably will sit on it.
So this is how much time? Is this our
yeah,
time?
Yeah. It'll be the 10th countdown. So you've got 10, 5, 2, 1, and 0.
Okay.
No, no, go to the
So well, I was gonna
and you'll be able to see the slides better. Well, good morning, everyone. Can you hear us okay? This has been one room where we've had some audio difficulties with the height of the mic. I want to welcome everyone and my roommates who just walked in. I'm Carol Garner. I'm from Little Rock, Arkansas at the Arkansas Center for Health Improvement. If y'all have heard about Arkansas and the BMIs, we're the folks that do it. But this morning we're going to be talking about marketing. And if you think back in this summer in July, you know, the Federal Trade Commission reported, you know, that food and beverage marketers spent about $1.6 billion marketing their products to kids and adolescents in 2006. Television accounted for nearly half of that amount, with additional spending on packaging, in-store promotions, in-store advertising, the internet, movies, television, and animated characters. So today's session is going to focus on marketing's influence on children's subjective taste, messaging directed at mothers, digital marketing via popular children's websites, and one state's law banning junk food ads in schools, and some current policy and legal landscape within the school food system. I'm going to introduce all of our speakers, and then they can just kind of follow each other, and we'll hold all the questions till the end, because in some of the sessions this week, there have been so many questions that some of the later speakers didn't have a full opportunity to talk. So we're going to let everybody have an opportunity to present their information and then open it up for questions. Our first speaker today was Patrice Chamberlain. She's a communications consultant and has been working in chronic disease prevention for the last 8 years, most recently for the American Cancer Society California Division. She has worked on a range of public health issues ranging from cancer control, health disparities, access to care, nutrition, physical activity, workplace health, and the impact of the built environment on health. And prior to her career in public health, Patrice has worked in public relations and advertising in the private sector with companies including Macy's, TBWA Shiat Day Advertising, and Schwartz Communications. Patrice's research interest in marketing and family nutrition was inspired by her joining the ranks of parenthood. Our second speaker will be Rob Moore. He graduated with a BS in Computer Systems Engineering from the University of Massachusetts Amherst. During school and upon graduation, he worked for a number of companies in the high-tech sector, including EMC Corporation and a startup venture offering alternative dispute resolution on the internet. In 2006, Mr. Moore earned a JD from Northeastern University School of Law. He clerked for the Honorable Fernande Duffley of the Massachusetts Appeals Court for 1 year and then joined the Public Health Advocacy Institute as a staff attorney. There he wrote a variety of legal issues engendered by the obesity epidemic. These included legal and practical impediments to implementing meaningful standards for nutrition in schools and the constitutional protection afforded advertising that targeted young children. He also has presented and participated in a number of conferences in that field. In 2008, Mr. Moore joined Sutrello and Capone as an associate in the firm's Toxic Torts Group. Karen O'Rourke received her bachelor's degree from the University of California at Berkeley and a master's of public health from San Jose State University. The first 7 years of her public health career were were spent with the American Cancer Society, both in California and Massachusetts. And there she coordinated statewide mammography screening and skin cancer screening programs and promoting tobacco control and other policies at the state and local level. In 1992, Karen and her family moved to Maine, and she began there working in the state health department, then at the city of Portland's public health division, managing their health promotion program. Karen currently is vice president of operations at the Maine Center for Public Health, and has been at the center since it opened its doors in 1999. The Maine Center for Public Health is a public health institute, and in addition to management responsibilities, Karen works on a number of public health practice initiatives, as well as policy and state-level programs around youth overweight, physical activity, and nutrition through collaboration with Maine's Public Health Agency and the Harvard Prevention Research Center. Matt LaPierre is a doctoral candidate at the University of Pennsylvania's Annenberg School of Communication. He has a bachelor's degree in mathematics and philosophy from the University of Massachusetts and a master's degree in communication science from the University of Connecticut. Matt's primary academic focus is on advertising and its effects on children and children's consumer culture. His secondary focus deals with the different ways that a child's cognitive and social development is influenced by media exposure. Matt is also this year's co-winner of the Food Nutrition Section's Student Award. Lori Dorfman directs the Berkeley Media Studies Group, which is a project of the Public Health Institute, where she oversees BMSG's research on the news, media advocacy training for advocates, and professional education for journalists. She earned her doctorate in 1994 from UC Berkeley School of Public Health, where using participant observation and content analysis, she studied how television news frames health. Her recent research examines news portrayals of various public health issues, including children's health, nutrition and agriculture, food and beverage marketing, paid family leave, racial discrimination, violence and alcohol, tobacco, and other drugs. Dr. Dorfman co-authored the major texts on media advocacy, Public Health and Media Advocacy Power for Prevention, and News for a Change, an Advocate's Guide to Working with the Media. Dr. Dorfman teaches master's students at UC Berkeley School of Public Health. She conducts media and advocacy training for grassroots organizations and public health leaders, consults for government agencies and community programs across the U.S., and publishes articles on public health and mass communication. She edited Reporting on Violence, a Handbook for Journalists, which helps reporters include a public health perspective in violence reporting, and is part of an interdisciplinary team that conducts workshops on violence reporting for newspapers and local TV news stations. In 2007, she directed BMSG's collaboration with the Center for Digital Democracy and American University to catalog and analyze the latest techniques in interactive digital marketing of food and beverages to children. Dr. Dorfman is directing this team as they investigate similar digital techniques in alcohol and tobacco marketing. So you can see from their background, they know the media. And hopefully today, you're going to know a lot more about the media when we're finished.
Good morning. So this morning I'm going to talk about a content analysis that I did while I was getting my master's degree at San Francisco State. But first I'd like to find out by a show of hands, how many of you are parents? Okay, so quite a few of you. Well, the rest of you, if you can just go along with us and think about the ads that you see every day and think about how they speak to you. And I have nothing to disclose. So it's no surprise that the food industry contributes to trying to influence the family food environment by really going after those who help shape that environment, mothers. And they spend a lot of money trying to do it. And what we are starting to see is that there's a growing body of public health research looking at how the food industry is marketing to kids, but there's really not a lot out there looking at how they're going after mothers. So why is this market segment so important to look at? Well, there's several reasons. Mothers as a market segment represent about $1.6 trillion of buying power, making them the third largest market in the world. So we have a lot of money to spend. Mothers are the primary decision makers about what foods are available in the home. Mothers influence children's eating behaviors. Parents are kids' primary source of information about food and nutrition. Mothers also influence children's purchasing behaviors, both now and then when those kids grow up, they're more likely to purchase products that they enjoyed when they were kids. And the best part about it for the food industry is that mothers represent free publicity. Mothers are more likely to promote products that they had positive experiences with to other women. And mothers also represent a credible source of trusted information from their friends. So what's happening to the family food environment? As more women have gone back into the workforce, it's left less time for home-cooked meals. So we've seen, you know, the change in eating patterns where more meals are being eaten outside the home, larger portion sizes, food that's not as healthy, more snacking, and more convenience food. But also the demands on moms have increased, and now they have a lot more conflicting priorities. They may be managing a job outside the home. They're also trying to oversee homework, spend time with their kids. They may spend a lot of time driving to school, work, and all these other activities. The average mom spends 64 minutes in the car, and that number actually increases for single mothers. So you know, you can imagine how that gets even more complicated. And so cooking a healthy meal for the family has to fit in with all of these other priorities. And let's face it, there's a lot that goes into making a healthy meal. You need to know what constitutes a healthy meal. You need the time to do it. You need to know how to prepare it. And then you need the money to buy the ingredients. So as a result, sometimes these food choices are compromised as a way of coping with the other demands or stresses on family life. And increasingly, mothers are living in this environment where there's this unrealistic vision of supermom, you know, where mothers are really pushed to try to do it all. And this may hit home for a lot of you. I know it does for me. And advertising really plays into this idea of supermom by promoting products in a way that suggests that if you just buy this product, we can help you do it all. So there apparently is a really simple solution to becoming that super mom. And they do this by using positive messages that you'll notice in ads that it's always has a very positive tone, and they are always promising an improved family life. And in contrast, a lot of public health campaigns tend to use fear-based appeals or guilt, and they really focus on individual behavior without providing any kind of greater context. And previous research has shown that using fear-based appeals, at least in terms of nutrition, may actually result in more anxiety among populations that are most at risk while creating apathy among populations that are not directly targeted. So they may not actually be as effective as we'd like them to be. So one of the strategies of a lot of these brands is that they really work to build trust among moms by demonstrating that they understand what mom's day is like. They understand her world. They want to show that they get the issues that she's facing. One of the ways that they do this is they use spokespeople and scenarios that moms can relate to. A survey put out by Edelman Public Relations found that people deem spokespeople who are like themselves to be the most credible, even more credible than a health professional. So they really try to show that they understand where moms are coming from. And they also, a lot of companies ranging from McDonald's to Chef Boyardee are also trying to show that they're making their products healthier in response to moms' desire to feed their kids healthier products. And, you know, a lot of times these nutritional improvements are pretty marginal. You can imagine that Chef Boyardee really isn't suddenly this healthy product. But they really are trying to demonstrate, you know, some kind of healthy change in response to mom's demand for healthier foods. And while taste has traditionally been the primary appeal used in advertising, as more attention is being paid to physical inactivity and poor nutrition, you'll see health claims being used more in ads. Although the interesting thing is that it doesn't always match consumers' health knowledge. You know, people have varying levels of health knowledge, so they may or may not truly understand the health claims being made. And as a result, we've seen some of these pretty misleading health claims in ads. For example, one study found that parents knew that it was important to feed their kids whole grains, and they expressed an interest in doing that, but when they were asked to identify which products were made with whole grains, very few were actually able to identify them. So I just wanted to show you some examples of some ads. On the left, we have a McDonald's ad. You can see the smiling boy whose shirt says, "You might be surprised to know who thinks about your child's nutrition as much as you do." And then on the right, we have a public health campaign, which is actually about 2 years old. But and I don't mean to offend anybody that may have worked on the public health campaign, because it was very valuable. But I did want to demonstrate the differences in how these two approach mothers. And this is actually one of the ads that I analyzed, which is one of my favorites, because you'll see the supermom. Not only is she serving lasagna without even looking, she can pour milk in a glass without having to look while giving her daughter her undivided attention. I mean, don't you wish you could do that? But the copy is even better. It says, every family dinner is a great story waiting to happen. Every night across America, families sit down to dinner, and what happens next is magical. They share stories. They create stories. They repeat stories. And then it goes on to say how, you know, Stouffer's can help you have this meaningful conversation at dinner. And I don't know about you all, but my family dinner table, it's not magical. I want it to be, but it's not. So, you know, so it really kind of feeds into this, look, if you do this, you can have this. And here's another ad for Land O'Lakes butter. And there are two generations and five states between them, and one recipe holds them together. So this kind of demonstrates how buying the product can help bring your family together. So now to my study. So I conducted an exploratory content analysis of food and beverage ads in parenting magazines. I wanted to know how many of these ads mothers were exposed to in parenting magazines, what types of products were being most frequently advertised, and what appeals were being used most frequently. So I did an ethnographic qualitative analysis looking at magazines read by mothers of U.S. mothers of children 0 to 18, and I did this using a keyword search in Cision, which is a media database. And I looked at the top 10 parenting magazines based on circulation, because that showed that they had the broadest reach. I looked at Good Housekeeping, Ladies Home Journal, Women's Day, Family Circle, Parents, Parenting, Working Mother, Cookie, Kiwi, and Mothering. And these first five magazines tend to focus on older mothers who are also mothers of older kids, mothers of teens and tweens, while the latter five magazines focus on younger mothers who are also mothers of younger children. So the appeals that I looked at included taste, healthfulness, convenience, increased family bond, nurturing mother, companionship or friendship with child, and that include like providing fun for your child, nostalgia for times past, and then an other bucket. And I came up with these theme categories based on a review of the literature, previous content analyses, and a preliminary review of food ads. So I ended up analyzing 576 advertisements in 30 magazines, and I just to give you an idea of the landscape, in these 30 magazines there was about 3,800 advertisements altogether, so that's food and non-food products. So women are really exposed to a lot of advertisements. And on average, mothers were exposed to about 21 food or beverage advertisements in each issue. And this probably doesn't come as a surprise, but the products most commonly advertised were prepared foods like Stouffer's lasagna or Kraft macaroni and cheese or candy or snacks, so candies, crackers. And the interesting thing was that healthfulness, so health claims, and taste were the appeals most frequently used, and a lot of times they were used together, but taste was often used to offset the healthfulness message. So the ad would, in effect, say that it tastes so good you won't know it's healthy. So here's a quick breakdown. You'll see that healthfulness was used just slightly more. So here's an example of one of these ads. The copy reads, when ranch tastes the way it's supposed to, vegetables taste better than they're supposed to, because apparently they're inherently supposed to taste bad. And in case any of you didn't know, Lunchables are actually an excellent source of calcium, protein, and total kid celebration. So here's an example of a health claim that, you know, is clearly misleading, because you have to actually look on the package to find out that this is not actually pizza at all. It's actually crackers with some sort of sausage substance. So some of the interesting things that I found was that a lot of the ads really played on this lack of nutrition knowledge among readers by including advertorial. And I'm not sure how many of you are familiar with advertorial, but it's an advertisement where the copy really blends right in with the editorial. So readers may think that it's part of the editorial when it's actually not. And a lot of these advertorials not only included nutrition education, albeit with a slant towards the product, but they also included education about parenting, like providing tips on, you know, typical parenting stresses, like how to get your kids out of the door in the morning, something I think we'd all like to know. And those ads that didn't make specific health claims, they still used images to promote the realness or homemade quality of the product. So they might use a pitcher of milk or fresh vegetables. And previous research has shown that these images can help support or contradict the written message. And also these images, they're noticed first and they can be recalled more quickly than the text can. So, and again, you know, these products really promise a way for moms to do it all and improved family life. And an interesting thing was that the ads offered ways for moms to connect with other moms. Almost all of the ads included a product website and encouraged moms to go there to connect with other moms, to share recipes, or get nutrition information. So here's an example of the advertorial. You'll see it. I'm sorry, you can't read the copy, but on the left it has some tips on how to make mornings less chaotic, and on the right it has a healthy recipe. So here is another wonderful ad that really promotes that website for moms to go to share information. And one of the quotes on there that Anne from Chicago says, I'm surprised that it doesn't taste like it was ever frozen. So some really interesting things here. It's funny because when I printed out my presentation, my four-year-old grabbed this and he said, this looks so delicious I could eat the whole page. Which is a little disturbing. So just to conclude, you know, these health claims are becoming increasingly influential. And, you know, we really need to pay attention to how they're being used, because they are being used in kind of a strange way. You know, they're being used to appeal to moms' desire to feed their kids healthy foods. But, you know, they're not being used. They're saying that, you know, it can either taste good or it can be healthy. And with no ads, you know, promoting just simple fruit and vegetable consumption, there's no way. It pretty much sends mothers the message that fruits and vegetables have to be dressed up or your kids won't eat it. And again, you know, this is advertising, obviously, is not a true mirror of reality, but it does give some insight into the conflicting messages that mothers face. So just quickly, because I'm out of time, just some recommendations. I think that the presence of this advertorial really shows that mothers are looking for a trusted source where they can get nutrition information and parenting information. That's one of the reasons why they're going to these parenting magazines in the first place. So we need to think about how we can deliver our messages in a way, you know, to provide consistent nutrition education. We also need to take a more holistic approach to how we're delivering our nutrition messages. You know, are there ways for us to collaborate with others so that we provide a more comprehensive support for parents and really consider nutrition messages within the greater context of parenting? Are there ways that we can work to advocate for better public policies that support families that ultimately will affect the food that goes on the table? You know, we really need to think about nutrition and parenting and how we might be able to approach it based on the different levels of the ecological model. And when we're reaching out to those moms, we really need to hone in on what subsegment we're trying to reach, what psychosocial needs they may have around a particular issue. Again, we need to build trust in our brand as a peer, not paternalistic, and one of the ways we can do that is by using spokespeople that the audience deems as credible. And most important, I think we really need to demonstrate an understanding of the world in which this group of mothers live. It's got to reflect the social, cultural, physical, economic environments in which they live. And we need to provide messages in a positive way with clear and accessible solutions. And with that, I will conclude with a big thank you to all of the people who helped me do the study. Thank you.
Hey there. My name's Rob. Before I begin, should I